I've always preferred nights. Something about being up while everyone else is asleep feels great. That, and I can't sleep. Ever since my fiancé passed away, sleeping became a luxury I couldn't afford. I used to lay in bed, tossing and turning the entire night. My eyes would be bloodshot. When sunlight peeked through my blinds, I rose up and off my bed like a zombie. Melatonin never helped. I guess my body grew an immunity to it over time. I mean, why wouldn't it? I'm surprised I didn't overdose, taking 10 pills a night. Herbal teas that help you sleep are rubbish. Nothing but a waste of money. Don't even get me started on those intense sleep routines. Shut off all electronics / artificial light 30 minutes before bed. Don't eat an hour before bed. Read a book, and whatever nonsense they have you do. That may work for some people. Sure as hell didn't work for me. I even resorted to counting sheep. Well, my version of counting sheep. Imagine millions of alternative realities where Vanit was still alive. I laid awake, smiling like a fool up at the popcorn ceiling. My imagination got so vivid that I would see a silhouette in the corner of my room for seconds at a time. I wanted nothing else but to believe it was really her. To believe she came back just to say one last proper farewell. The logical part of me knew that what's dead will always stay dead. The other part of me found loopholes in that saying, what's dead may never truly die, in my mind. The sleepless nights and hallucinations took a toll on my mental health. I contemplated ending things many, many times. Maybe I'll be with her in the afterlife, I thought. She's waiting for me. Thankfully, the logical side of me won, and I attended therapy. My therapist was, and still is, the kindest woman I've ever met. At first, I thought she was getting paid to act nice to me, pretending to care about my feelings. But no, she truly listened and understood. When I told her about my sleep problems, she recommended that I get a graveyard shift job. It never occurred to me. I live in a big city, the city that never sleeps. There are overnight jobs everywhere. The perfect solution. I could just sleep throughout the day. I applied to every graveyard job I could find online. Some rejected me, saying my work experience at a grocery store wasn't enough. A few called me in for interviews, which went bad, I guess, since I never got a reply. Only one job was willing to take on an inexperienced employee. It was a warehouse job for a well-known grocery store in my area. The pay wasn't too bad. Plus, I had to start getting experience somewhere. I got word from my new boss that two other people were starting on the same night as me. That was somewhat relieving. I wouldn't be the only new guy. I always got stupidly nervous before starting new things. A job, college, the gym, everything. I feared the unknown. My mind would cope by imagining every possible scenario. By the time I pulled into the parking lot of the warehouse, I thought of 175 scenarios that could go down. Blue moonlight shone down on the warehouse. It had a grey steel exterior with a ton of light poles lining the sidewalk. It was as if they wanted to recreate the sun with how many light poles there were. Just thinking of the electricity bill made my head ache. Maybe the absurd amount of black coffee I drank played a part in that. I glanced at my malfunctioning radio, which displayed the time. 11:45. The closer it got to 12, the faster my heart beated. I pulled down my car's sun visor and looked in the mirror. Only then did I realize how dilated my pupils were. Damn, I drank too much coffee. They're gonna think I'm on drugs and fire me. My overthinking got interrupted by a sudden knock at the window. I jumped at the sound, nearly jumped out of my own skin. My head hit the car ceiling with a thud. To my left, I heard some giggling. I turned to see a woman's face smiling. Her eyes were caramel colored and hinted at joyfulness. She had thick eyebrows like mine, yet hers were well lined. She wore the yellow company polo, also like mine, but hers fit her body perfectly. Mine was baggy, since they didn't have a men's medium size. Bracelets rattled on her wrist as she waved. I felt extremely bad. How did someone as beautiful as her end up homeless? I cranked down the window of my beat-up car and gave her an awkward little smile. Sorry, I have no money. This is literally my first day. Huh? She tilted her head at me and looked around as if I were talking to someone else. She looked back at me and smiled with realization. Please, just some change would suffice, sweet sir, she giggled. My cheeks burned up and I stammered, I'm so sorry. I smiled and scratched the back of my head. I even noticed her yellow polo. Jeez, I'm stupid. I take that as a compliment. She backed up, giving room to open the door and get out. Being mistaken for a homeless person is a compliment? I stuttered like a fool. This was not one of the scenarios I expected on my ride here. Of course. She balanced herself on a concrete planter. I leaned against my car, struggling to find where my hand should go. In my pockets, crossed. Homeless people are the freest of all. But they don't really have anywhere to settle down, I said. Look around, she spun her head exaggeratedly, like a pirate ship navigator. They can settle down anywhere, as long as they don't get kicked out, of course. She hopped down and stared me in the eyes. Yeah. My eyes darted back and forth, averting eye contact. Are you Raphael or Remy? Wait, let me guess. She stroked her chin. Raphael? That's me. Let's go, she celebrated, as if she'd won the World Cup. I knew it. You don't look like a Remy. How so? I don't know. The curly hair suits someone named Rafa. As soon as she said Rafa, I wasn't there anymore. In my mind, I was running through an open flower field with Venite being backlit by the rising sun. Rafa, she called out, sounding close yet so far. Rafa. Her voice was as soothing as a warm blanket fresh out of the dryer. Rafa! Her voice sounded like a million screeching insects. Rafa! She said, the woman in front of me. She glanced at her watch. Should we get going? It's 11:50. Don't call me Rafa. I turned to walk to the warehouse. She jogged to catch up, bracelets jingling, and walked next to me. Why? Just don't. I looked down at our shadows. We approached the huge metal doors. Two cameras glared down at us, red lights blinking. The woman next to me waved at the camera and yelled out, Hi, we're the new people. I'm Karen, he's Rafa. The metal doors clicked and unlocked. Karen skipped forward, pushing it with all her might. She held her back against it and waved me ahead. Thanks, I said. The door shut behind us. The warehouse was lit up like a fire. Numerous fluorescent lights hung overhead, buzzing like millions of invisible flies. Looking around, there didn't seem to be any shadows. Tall, shadowless shelves lined the entire interior, resembling a maze. Two shadowless people walked around this maze, pulling electric jacks with loaded pallets. The beeping of forklifts reverberated through the warehouse, overpowering the lo-fi music playing in the intercoms. No one paid us attention, except for a big bald guy marching towards us with a clipboard under his armpit. He wore a yellow company polo, same as everyone, but his was stretched to its last string because of his muscles. "Go ahead, clock in, then follow me," he said as kindly as his deep voice allowed him. He pointed at the wall where we had just ended from. There was a wall-mounted tablet awaiting us. Karen skipped towards it and punched in her employee number from the card they gave us new people. I punched mine in out of memory. We followed our new boss, navigating through the maze-like aisles. "You two work in the far corner, helping hand stack pallets, since you haven't taken the test for the electric jack usage." "Goddamn OSHA," he grunted. We arrived at the far right corner, where a tall lanky man with bowl cut hair was already stacking boxes. "Here you are." He pointed at the two empty pallets next to the bowl cut guy's pallet. "If you have any questions, feel free to call me on that intercom there." He pointed at the wall behind the pallets and towers of boxes where a land phone was mounted. "If you need to use the restroom, it's located on the far left. If you do use the restroom, never, and I mean never, turn off the lights. Got it?" "Yes, sir," said Karen, standing with her shoulders pinned back like a cadet. I nodded. "Very well," he said. "Off you go." We walked to our pallets. Karen took the middle one. I took the one to the right, furthest from the bowl cut dude. Stocking boxes left and right got tiring for my back just a few minutes in. I looked at Karen and the bowl cut dude, who I assumed was Remy. They were quick to stack. Karen stacked a pallet neatly, putting the bigger ones to the bottom for support and the smaller ones to the top. Remy valued speed over neatness. He was on his second pallet. I copied Karen, neat and quick. When Karen finished the first pallet, and it was taken away by someone with an electric jack, she decided to make small talk. "Remy, right?" "Right," he said, not once looking up from his pallet. "Nice to meet you. I'm Karen, and he's Rafa." She pointed at me. "Nice to meet you, co-workers," said Remy. Karen took the hint and looked at me with eyes that said, "He's a jerk." I smiled, reassuring her I knew what she meant. Time passed slower than a sloth walking underwater. When my second pallet was stacked, I got the sudden urge to pee. The absurd amount of coffee wanted out of my bladder. "I'll be back," I told Karen. "If the boss stops by, let him know I'm in the bathroom, please." "Got it." "You won't turn off the lights," Remy cut off Karen. "You won't." "Of course I won't." I looked at him, confused. "I knew you were a wuss," he shrugged. I played along with his little game. "Curiosity killed the cat," I replied. "Good thing I ain't no cat," he said, finally looking up from his pallet. He had a deep scar across his right eye. Straightening up his body, he was even taller than I imagined. At least 6'3". He towered over my 5'9" self. He sure as hell towered over Karen. "Whatever you are, curiosity will kill that as well." His eyebrows furrowed. "Gotcha," I thought. His expression turned straight, and he went back to work on his pallet. I felt a presence behind me, knowing full well it was the boss based on Karen's smirk. I turned around. The boss glared down at me. His resting face gave the impression of being mad all the time. "Off somewhere, I suppose." "Bathroom, sir." "Restroom," he corrected. "Yeah, that." "Very well," he said, stepping aside to let me pass. I walked away, feeling his stare dig into the back of my neck. Chills shot up all over my body. I entered the bright and narrow hallway in the far corner of the building. There was only one unisex bathroom, odd for a building of this size. I twisted the doorknob, pushing the door open and stepping in. It was the cleanest bathroom I've ever seen. The chessboard-looking floor reflected light as if it had been freshly waxed. The two mirrors reflected a 4K-like image of myself, maybe even 8K. It was as if there was another me staring back instead of a reflection. I quickly did my business and washed my hands. The soap dispensers actually worked. It amazed me. As I was on my way out, I reached for the light switch out of instinct. I stopped myself, remembering this wasn't my apartment and I didn't have to worry about the electricity bill. A thought occurred to me at that moment. Odd, I thought. If they didn't want anyone turning off the lights, why not remove the light switch completely? It sounded like common sense to me. Maybe they never thought of it, or maybe they have, but decided against it for some odd reason. I shrugged and continued to the door. The door swung open. It banged against the wall. The thud reverberated in the small bathroom. The floor rumbled with angry footsteps. I looked up. It was Remy. He marched right up to me, grabbing my shirt and twisting it. "You think you're funny, huh? Smart ass." The door shut behind him. The stitching of my polo shirt teared slowly. The ripping sound was the only thing I could hear. It infuriated me. My blood boiled. I grabbed his wrist, digging my fingernails into it. He let go of his grip and let out a grunt. With my other hand, I grabbed his palm and bent it back. He squirmed around. "Don't move," I said. "I'll break it." With his free hand, he swung. It was a haymaker, a sloppy punch. I had plenty of time to duck. I ducked, letting go of his wrist for a second and countering with a left hook to his liver. He grunted and his body struggled to stay upright. I grabbed his wrist again, bending it back even further. "Don't test me, I'll break it." He let out a yelp, looking around for an escape. There wasn't any. I could break his wrist at any. He reached for the lights. He managed to flick the switch. But the light stayed on. The buzzing of the fluorescent light grew loud. As loud as a boiling teapot. Louder than that. I let go of his wrist and clamped my hands over my ears. It was a poor attempt at blocking out that deafening screech. The lights flickered, slowly. The rhythm they had resembled laughter. How in the world were lights laughing at us, mocking us? The screech grew even louder. I felt paralyzed. I wanted to dash for the light switch. I couldn't. Somehow I knew if I let go of covering my ears, I would be deaf for the rest of my life. I groaned and yelped. Either me or Remy called out for help. Maybe it was both of us. I couldn't even hear my own voice over the sound. My eyes darted left and right. Then I froze my gaze on the mirror. It was warping, rippling like a portal from a game. It called out to me, called out to us. She called out to me. Vineet. I felt a presence in the rippling mirror. Her voice overpowered the screeching, offering me an end to all my pain, present and past. "Yes," I thought, "I want it." I trudged to the mirror, hands still clasped over my ears. It felt as if I was knee-deep in quicksand. My bones were stiff. Only way I could continue forward was if I waddled. So I did. I stood in front of the mirror. My reflection and I were the only ones in the world. It, or I, smiled. My reflection rippled and morphed into something else. Someone else. Vineet. The sky blue eyes stared at me, full of life. Her thin eyebrows scrunched together as she smiled, the face she always made. She could never truly be mad at me. She had to smile on the rare occasion she was mad. She wore a heavy eyeliner. When she used to cry, the tears left black streaks. I remember that was the cutest thing ever. Vinny was so sensitive. I didn't deserve her, a stubborn man like me. Out of instinct, I reached out to touch her cheek. I stopped. I heard faint voices calling out to me, but I wasn't there anymore. I was in an open flower field, and Vinit was close now, closer than ever. All logic escaped my grasp at that moment. What was logic worth compared to Vinit? She was priceless. My fingers were within an inch from her cheek. She blushed, puckering her lips to the side, as she did when I would caress her hair. I felt a heavy hand on my shoulder. Two heavy hands. They clamped down like a vice grip and yanked me back. I fell down, head banged against the floor. My vision was hazy. I laid against the cold tarred floor, staring at the flat ceiling. Where was I? Not my apartment, not my popcorn ceiling. Blurred faces hovered over me. Faint voices called out my name. The bald-headed man waved frantically. Bracelet-covered arms hovered over my eyes. I tracked them back and forth. "Vinit," I murmured. "Karen," a faint voice said. "Karen, your new co-worker." The blurred face smiled. My body got lifted up and placed on a soft, thin bed. My eyes were fixated on the blurred figure who said her name was Karen. I smiled. My vision went dark. When I awoke, I found myself staring up at some blinding lights. Four steel walls surrounded me. "This isn't a hospital," I thought. Voices spoke in hushed whispers. I heard my name a few times. "He's awake," said Karen. "He survived the test. Can we keep him?" "Keep me? What?" Said a deep voice. "Very well. I suppose he did prove himself worthy." "Yes," Karen celebrated. She came into view, looking down at me with caring eyes. "Okay, things are gonna get real crazy now," she smirked. "What?" I murmured. "Can I tell him, Dean, please?" Karen looked back at the boss for approval. He nodded. "We're fighting a war against the mirror dimension, and you're a part of it now," she grinned. "Oh, damn," I said. "I need some sleep." Dean and Karen laughed, a contagious laugh. I couldn't help but laugh myself. Dean's smile vanished. "No, but seriously, we need your help." My eyes rolled back, and my vision went dark again. And that's my story. How I came to fight for our reality against the mirror dimension. Karen was right. Things got crazy real fast. We're on a break from fighting now, so I figured I might as well share my story. Our story. I never truly forgot about Vinit. That's a fight I don't think I'll ever beat. Fighting helps me postpone those emotions, but they're bottled up, ready to burst at any moment. Karen, she helps me out a lot. I'm truly grateful for her, even for our boss, Dean. I guess you're wondering what happened to Remy. Well, he got swallowed up. Whatever he saw in that mirror managed to lure him in. I don't blame him. Vinit almost succeeded in luring me. I dread the day I have to face her again. But with Dean, Karen, and the other co-workers at my side, I have a better chance of beating it. Until next time, make sure to stay away from mirrors in the dark. I have a better chance of beating it.